Hi, and welcome to Three Worlds podcast number 14, the second part of the set of podcasts around the medicine wheel. And this is take two. I recorded this a few days ago, and having spoken for about an hour and a half, discovered that it hadn't recorded. Fate is cruel. So, here we go with the second part of the podcast. So, recapping what we did last time, and I haven't put the handout up yet because it dawned on me when I went to do it that there would be hardly anything on it because I only covered a little bit of the ground last time. So I will do a complete handout for all of it, probably at the end of this podcast, I would think. So to recap, we put a cloth down in the middle of our circle last time, and the cloth had five candles, one for the south, one for the north, one for the west, one for the east, and one for the centre. And in the south, I put a cedar cone, because the south represents water, and it represents plants, and on a human level, it represents our emotions, and it represents the past. In the west, I put a stone down because it's the place of the stone people, it's the place of our human body, and its time is the present moment. In the north, I placed a magpie wing because north is the place of the animals. And it is also the place of air, and it is the place of the human mind. And its time is the future, because that's where we are when we're thinking. Okay, and having thought about the next bit, in the future, here it arrives, and the east, I placed a Buddha, because the east is the place of fire. It is the place of the human people. It is the place of, on a human level, our spirituality and our sexuality, our creativity, our passion, our fire. And the time is no time at all, is across all times. You know, when I'm painting sometimes, I'm a painter, and painting is a strange thing for me because I go into the past a lot. It's hard to describe that, but I can be sitting and painting and it's like my head switches off and I don't even try to, but I just start to think about things that have happened in the past, and it becomes so real sometimes while I'm painting. I could almost step into it. It's like I can sense it there. It's so tangible. That is an expression of the East place. And when you're really, really creative about something, time flies because, you know, you're having fun. And that's also an expression of the East place. So it's across time. In the center, in our recap, is the element of space. Ether, spirit, if you like. On a human level, it's the place of our soul. Like I said last time, I'm not my body, I'm not my emotions, I'm not my thought, I'm not my creativity and spirituality. I am my soul, my essence, my very center. And we all are. So we always are at the center. So there you go. There's a recap of the entire last podcast. I suggest if you haven't heard it, you go back and listen to episode 13. Give it a listen to. But that was just a recap for those of you that have. Okay, so I'm going to add some more things to the medicine wheel here. And I'm going to concentrate more on the human level. The human level, okay, of mind, body, emotion and spirit. I'll tell you before I do that, though. I want to talk about colours, because for me it's a nice way of visualising the four directions. So colours. Now, the colours vary depending on the traditions that you're working with. These are the colours that I have been taught for this particular set of medicine wheel teachings. And these are the colours. In the south, it's the colour red. In the west, it's the colour black. In the north, it's the colour white. In the east, it's the colour yellow. And my teachers have said those are the four races of people too. The red people, the black people, the white people, the yellow people. We all of us sit on a wheel. Those four colours, there's no great mystery about them. I'm sure you could think of ways to explain why yellow is in the east and white is in the north, whatever. Yeah, there are reasons for those things, but in a way I don't think that's that important. And the other thing about the colours is that they're easily available colours. That's why they were chosen historically. Purple is a really difficult colour to find in nature. So is blue. So is green. I'm talking about pigments here. Okay, the sky is blue, but you try and find a pigment that you can make into a paint that's blue. It's hard. Same with green. They exist, of course they exist, but they are very expensive. That's why ultramarine is such an expensive pigment. Ultramarine in medieval times was worth more than gold because it was such a precious, precious colour. Blue. Terribly difficult to get. So, yellow ochre, red ochre, soot, and chalk, they're dead easy to get. You've got those four colours. That's why cultures across the world have those four colours in different orders, different places, different connotations, but they have those four colours because they are available. There's no great mystery to it. Spirituality is practical. It's pragmatic. One of my teachers, Sun Bear, said, he had a lovely saying. I have some nice memories of Sun Bear. But anyway, one of his sayings is, if your philosophy doesn't grow corn, I don't want to know about it. So I hope that you will find that the medicine wheel grows corn. And it's a practical stuff. You know, life is practical. I'll tell you a story about Sun Bear. I saw him come up to a vicar once, a nice English vicar, wearing a dog collar and a tweed jacket. Typical vicar. Sun Bear was a huge guy. He was sort of tall and wide, and there was this very archetypal kind of vicar standing there in a pub, actually. And he walked up and he came across to this vicar and he grabbed him and gave him a big hug. And he said, "Ho, brother, I see we're in the same line of business." That's one of my memories of Sun Bear. Blessing, Sun Bear, you were a good teacher. All right, so we're moving on. This is a wheel that isn't from Sun Bear. Sun Bear did have a medicine wheel, but I could never get on with that one. So this is a different tradition. Anyway, okay. Going to start in the south. And I'm going to talk about bits to do with humans. This is a path of power. Now, there's funny connotations around power. Some people are kind of comfortable with it. Some people are really hungry for it and they want it precious. They want power. Well, there's two sorts of power. This is from one of my other teachers, Jonathan Horvitz, who teaches that there are two sorts of power. And I completely agree with this. He is American, but he lives in Holland. And so he uses bits of European languages. This is Dutch, and I guess it's also German as well. And they have two words for power. The first is Kraft, as in a craftsperson. And the second is Macht, as in Wehrmacht, the army. Macht is might. Kraft is craft. They're both expressions of power. Macht is when you put your will out over something or somebody else. That's a no-no power. Craft is when you work with that person or that thing and you create something bigger and better through it, with it, by having its help. Craft and Macht, very important. We just tend to think of the word power. That's kind of a mixed connotation. This path is also called the warrior's path. And warriorship is about fighting the enemies within yourself and being a warrior in that way. It's the way of craft. If you want to fight the enemies outside of yourself, then I would suggest that that is the soldier's path, and it's to do with Macht. Now, you can go along that path if you want. Some people are called for it. But I personally don't find it that comfortable, and I don't think it's that healthy. And I certainly look around the planet now and see a lot of the things that have happened are to do with Macht and soldiery. I prefer to be a warrior. At least that's my aim. I'm not a very good one, but that's where I've got my compass pointed. So, if you want to be a warrior, you've got enemies. And those enemies are inside yourself. And the first enemy to any path of power is fear. Is your fear of mostly your emotions, not fitting in with other people. What are you going to do if you're different to everybody in your peer group? So fear is the enemy that sits in the south, because it's the first enemy that a warrior has to face. We are all scared. Life is a difficult thing. It hurts if you get ostracized from your peer group, especially as a little kid, when you're vulnerable and you're needing approval. And so we learn to conform, we learn to fit in. We learn to do the right thing so that we stay safe and we stay in our molds. I have a counselor friend who talks about gingerbread cutters. She talks about everybody having a gingerbread cutter down on them, like they were made of dough, right? Gingerbread dough. And gradually in childhood, they have gingerbread cutters, which make little gingerbread men or gingerbread women, okay? And that's their shape. And gradually they learn to actually pull the cutters down on themselves to cut off anything that kind of leaks out so that they maintain a nice shape. And if they start to spread their dough outside of their nice, normal, conventional shape, it is scary. And I'll tell you what, it's even scarier for all the people around them, because they will clamp that gingerbread cutter down on that little dough person like crazy. You start to change and you're in a relationship. It'll be fun. You start to change and you're at work. You start to change full stop if there's other people around you, because other people like you to be predictable. So that's the place of fear. We all have fears. We have fears of expressing our feelings. We have fears of doing things that are unexpected of us. We have fears of going inside ourselves, learning about ourselves. We all have different fears, but we all have fears. And the south is the place of our child, because that's where the child comes from. That's where all those fears are formed. Way, way back. So the first job is to face our fears. Now, there's two sorts of fears, of course. If you're standing on the top of a cliff and it's really windy and you're very, very much in danger of falling off, you're going to be frightened. And that is a rational, everyday, common, garden, appropriate fear. If you are having to do a talk and you're not very comfortable about it because people might laugh at you, that is a different sort of fear. And in those fears, I would say steer for the fear. I don't always do it. I'm sure you don't always do it, but it's a good policy to have. Steer for the fear, because in the fear is growth. It's like we live our life in little boxes, and If you think of the, do you know Russian dolls, where you have a little doll inside a slightly bigger doll inside a slightly bigger doll? I think people and life are a bit like that. You kind of, you end up, well, you live your life as this little doll, and eventually you pluck up courage and you kind of move up a size. It's like you're in a box and you kick down the walls of the box and you find there's a bigger box. And you live your life in that one. And you keep going. And you kick down those walls, going into bigger boxes, bigger dolls. I'm kind of mixing metaphors here. But you get the picture, I'm sure. So gradually your life expands. All the time it expands. And you have to do that through learning, through experiencing, and through growing. Lots of ways to grow. So that is the fear. That is the enemy of the South. Fear is the enemy of the South. So, okay, we're going to go across the wheel now to the North. The enemy of the North is a closed mind. Remember, the mind is a great place to learn from. It's a place for you to take in the facts. But we think we know it. Yawn, yawn, yeah, 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 I don't need to listen to you, I know the truth, you're a wanker. Okay? We've all been there, we all do it. Closed mind. Sometimes I'll read a book, you know, about shamanism or about something else, and there'll be a long, boring paragraph because I think I know that subject and I just skip over it. Okay, sometimes there is nothing in that paragraph that I don't already know, but very often hiding in there is a little gem, something that I didn't know, and maybe that'll open my world a little bit. We close our minds, so the first enemy is fear, the second enemy is I don't want to know. Cozy life, come on, close your mind, have a cozy life, don't look at your fears, don't look at your feelings. Be a zombie, world like zombies. We're conditioned to be zombies. We have zombie factories. They're called schools. Not all schools, but a lot of them. Okay? Don't be a zombie. Think about things. Be mindful. Be aware. Look at what's happening and learn from it. Take in stuff. Don't have a closed mind. Second enemy. Okay? So we move through that enemy, hopefully learning. Because that takes us to the third enemy. Third enemy is in the West. And this is a really important one. Third enemy is power. And I guess it's the sort of power that is Macht. And it comes up if we haven't dealt with our South stuff. We all have difficult childhoods. Some of us have difficult, more difficult than other people. That's the nature of life. Life's a classroom. And sometimes classrooms stink. But we learn. And we have our feelings. And hopefully we deal with our feelings. And then by the time that we've got an open mind and we've learned all this stuff and we move into the West, we're no longer wanting to do it back to the world, basically. So we learn about power. And we start to be able to use the power for ourselves instead of putting power out over other people because we're scared. If people are scared and they get to a position of power, they're going to want to make the world safe. They're going to want to make the world more comfortable for them. So they're going to put their power out on other people to control the situation. We're all control freaks, but some people are more so. And if some people get a lot of power, heaven help those people around them. So the West is the enemy of power. And that's why it's important to deal with your South stuff. All of these teachings start from the South. South's really important. Okay, fourth enemy is across the wheel from the West. It's the enemy of the East. It is the enemy that is to do with fire and spirituality and sexuality and all of those things that kind of get a little bit passionate. Sorry, I used the P word. I shouldn't do that. I'm British. British people don't have passion. We have a standing joke about Europeans in Britain. Europeans are terribly, terribly passionate. They have their feelings all over the place and it's so untidy. Damn it, we're British. We don't have feelings. So, enemy in the East is the enemy of illusion, fantasy, flammableness, craziness. It's the place where we go into our passion too much, we lose touch with reality. It expresses itself in lots of ways. But it's the sort of place of the sort of off-the-planet guru, if you like. People who are so spiritual, they're no earthly good. So that, in essence, is the enemy of the East. It's a kind of slightly harder one to grasp, but basically it's unreality. And of course, if you haven't dealt with your South stuff, and you've learnt a lot of wisdom and knowledge, well, not exactly wisdom, it's just knowledge, really, in the North, and you've gained lots of power in the East, in the West, sorry, then you are going to be a very powerful, charismatic guru type in the East, because you'll have learnt an awful lot of power, but you're going to be very out of balance. So you can imagine what somebody is like that's like that. They're in the East, they've got all this power, all this knowledge, but they haven't dealt with their South stuff. And it just escalates, it builds and it builds, and they get more and more out of balance. And, well, quite frankly, I'd rather be around somebody in the West that hadn't dealt with their stuff than around somebody in the East. In one of the Medicine Wheel teachings, the East is a tyrant's place. It's the place of the psychopath. It's the place of the person with dead eyes. The person that is so disconnected from spirit in their own fantasy world that they won't hesitate to just kill you. That's one of the tyrant teachings. The East is a very powerful place. If you've got all the way around the medicine wheel unbalanced and you get to the East, you're going to be really not nice to know. So those are the enemies. Now there's another bit to that. These are qualities of the directions. The quality of the South is giving. Plants sit in the South. Plants are considered to be givers. They give away. Things eat them. You don't get too many triffids that kind of hunt down gazelles and kill them in a corner and devour them. There's one or two. There's some around in the Welsh mountains. But you learn as a small kid to avoid those. Plants are givers. Our feelings are in the South. Ideally, we give with our feeling. We have a feeling, we share it. We don't have a tirade in the middle of the high street and a paddy like a three-year-old, but we give our feelings. We let our waters flow. We let our energy flow. That's important. So that's the South. Cross the wheel to the North. Place of receiving. Animals are said to be receivers. Many medicine people will not do healing around people if there are animals in the room, because the animals will take the healing energy, take the direction of the ceremony instead of the person. Animals are receivers. It's the place of our mind. So our mind receives. We receive knowledge, facts, information. Mind is a wonderful computer. Of course, the mind gets terribly contaminated by our feelings sometimes. I trained before all this shamanic stuff as a psychotherapist, and I trained in a form of psychotherapy called transactional analysis. Now, I don't know, I don't want to go into a huge amount about TA because it's a vast subject, but it's got a lot of uses and kind of relates itself to medicine wheel. TA, you draw a person by three circles. First circle at the bottom is the feelings. It's called the child. Second circle is the adult. It's our thinking part. Third circle is our parent. And you have these three circles, one above the other. Child, adult, parent. And what happens in psychopathology, and that's a long word, isn't it? I like that word, psychopathology. I haven't used that word for a long time. When you're working with a client, very often they will have what's called contaminated thinking, and they would draw this by, or you would draw this as a way of describing it, by having the South circle, the child circle, if you like, the bottom circle, overlapped with the adult circle. So their thinking isn't clear. their thinking is contaminated by all their child feelings coming into it. Yeah? Can you see how that would work? And that happens an awful lot with everybody. The South Place kind of leaks and it affects our thinking. It's very important not to have that happen. And gradually, as you go through life and you do this sort of medicine wheel stuff and you do whatever practice you do, and maybe you go and see a counselor and all that sort of stuff, and you just learn gradually that your thinking doesn't have to be contaminated by your child, by your South, by your emotions. So ideally, the North is just a place of receiving pure facts. Now, get yourself a stone, put it in the freezer overnight, take it out the next day, and pop it down the back of your shirt. It's cold, isn't it? That's because stones hold the cold. Or put a stone in some nice warm water, and then get somebody to place it on your back, and it'll be nice and warm. That's because stones hold heat. And that's the quality of the West. It's holding. I always like to think of it in terms of a person, as it's a place of gestating. It's like we have a moment of pause before we kind of... Well, it's like we've weighed up the facts in the North. We've kind of taken in that information, and then we kind of gestate it. It's a digestion place. And we just sort of wait for a moment or two to let it settle and see what we want to do. And then the quality in the East is determining, acting. So we move from the West to the East and we act. We actually make that action happen in the world. The East is the place of humans. Humans are determiners. We shape the planet. We pollute the skies. We foul the oceans. We cut down the forests. We are determiners. We act. We create. And we destroy. Two faces of the same coin. So, that in essence is a little bit of living. I drop a hammer on my foot. Ouch! I'm frightened. I'm frightened of the damage that I've done. Oh my God. I move to the North. I take in the facts. I look at my foot. It's not gushing with blood. There looks like I've bruised a bit of the toenail. Ow, it's not going to be comfortable. What am I going to do with this? I move to the West. Okay, I just state the thing. What do I do here? Okay, I kind of know what to do. I go to the East. I go and I just clean up my foot, make sure it's all right, and I rub something like some comfrey balm or something like that on it that's going to help with the bruising, and maybe bandage it if it needs it, or if it's really serious, I'd go and get help. That's the action. That's a little bit of life. Feelings in the South, taking the facts in the North, hold, gestate, get a pause, sense of what I need to do in the West, and then do it in the East. And then that's a clear path back to the South again, for another little bit of life. And we keep doing that. Hopefully a healthy person has this little circular sort of figure of eight type movement happening all the time. Feelings. Think about it. Pause. Take a moment to work out what you need to do. Do it. And then the next bit of life comes along and you feel about that. And then take in the facts and then hold it and then act. That's life. If you look at it as a symbol, it's the infinity symbol. A figure of eight on its side. Because life is infinite in that way. We live our life in that good way. But actually, that's the wrong way to live. Because if you're born into a nice Western society, and I guess you probably are if you're listening to this podcast, you can't live your life like that. You're wicked and selfish if you do that. To actually give your feelings, receive from the North, and hold in the West and act in the East. That is so wrong. Naughty you, slap wrists. What you should do to be a nice, proper, civilized human being, especially in a nice Western country like Britain, is that you should hold your feelings. We don't want any of those nasty things seeping out. Thank you very much. You give with your body. You work really hard. You do lots of things for lots of people. If you give with your body, you'll be a really nice person. You'll always be available. People will be able to depend on you and put lots and lots of weight on you, and you'll carry it because you like to give with your body. That's the way it is. Isn't that good? What a nice person you are. Here, have another brick. Have another cardboard box to carry. Ah, what a nice person. They're always so predictable and willing to help. That's the West place. The North place? Well, instead of receiving information, then you act there, you determine there, you make up your mind and you act from your head. You ignore your feelings, you work hard with your body, you act from your head without actually sort of really feeling about it or anything like that. And then if you do all of that, you're going to receive in the East. You're going to receive from spirit, from daddy, from mummy, from God, from the goddess, because you've been such a nice person. You haven't had any of those uncomfortable feelings and made people feel uncomfortable around you. You've worked ever so hard. You've been so in your head and known what to do about it that spirit will reward you and you'll go to heaven. That's the Western way. It's not the medicine way. It's the Western way. The medicine way is that you give your feelings in the South, you let your waters flow, you receive the information in the North, you gestate it, you hold it in the West, and then you act in the East in a spirited way. Very different to the way that most of us were brought up. Okay, now if I'm kind of teaching with people in a circle, rather than a virtual circle, what I tend to do at this point is I tend to pick up a drum. And no, I'm not going to play it. I'm going to play with it. I hold the drumstick vertically on the ground, sticking up in the air like a kind of toy tower. And I balance the drum on top of it in the center of the drum. So the drumstick is in the centre of the drum. It's a bit hard to imagine, perhaps. Think of a stick stuck in the ground and balance a plate on it so that the stick is resting right on the centre of the plate. Now, you can probably imagine that. Think of it as a table with one leg. That's an even better way of doing it. Okay, we've got this table with one leg right in the centre of the round table. Okay, round table, one leg. Not a good design for a piece of furniture, but great as an example of a human being. You're all a one-legged table. And I'll tell you why you are a one-legged table. One-legged tables have got lots of emotions on the South. And it makes the South of the table really heavy. So it starts to lean that way. It starts to tip like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. This one-legged table is in great danger of collapsing, and if enough weight is placed there, it will become severely unbalanced and it will fall over, just like a human being. So, too much weight in the South. What are we going to do? We're going to have to take some of that weight off, and we need to put maybe some more weight in the North to balance it so we get that person to think. We do a bucket job with their feelings. It's like there's this great well of water there. We dip our bucket in and we get them to tip it out. So they're bailing out their feelings. They're starting to have their feelings. They're starting to deal with their feelings and the South becomes lighter. And at the same time, they're starting to think. So the North starts to come down and it gets a little bit heavier and they get a little bit more balanced as a person. And then the table doesn't fall over. This is wonderful. Okay, so you've got this one-legged table, and they've just about managed to balance the South and the North. Huh, thank God for that. Okay. But there's another direction. There's the East and the West, the other axis. They start to get more confident in the world. They've dealt with their feelings and their thinking more, so they're getting really confident, and they go out and they get a good job. And they earn lots of money, and they get 5 cars and 63 televisions and a hi-fi in every cupboard. And the West starts to tip because they're getting so, so heavy in the West. Whoa, all that money in the bank, all that possessions in the cupboard, all that lawnmower in the garden, all that holidays in the sun. The West gets really heavy and the East tips up. And if they're not careful, that table's going to fall over in a different direction. So they realise maybe that their life isn't working terribly well and it's not very comfortable and they don't feel very stable and it's all starting to get scary. So they go and work in the East, and maybe they go and do yoga, or they do something creative, or they go and listen to a podcast about Medicine Wheel or something like that, and they start to balance it. Trouble is, maybe they balance it too much, man. Maybe they really go with those colours, man. Hey, just chill, man. Everything's really cool. Oh, I had a letter from the bank manager yesterday, man. I just kind of chilled. I just put it on my altar, you know. Right? You can see where I'm getting to. It's the Space Cadets place. It's the place of, again, they're so spiritual, they're no earthly good. All right? That's the East starting to tip down. You need to get them in the garden. Actually, I better not say that. I hate gardening. You need to go and get them to tidy up the house or wash up or, you know, stuff like that, physical stuff. And that starts to balance this one-legged table so that it becomes a little bit more stable. Trouble is, we do that a million times a day. This poor table is rocking this way and that way, and we're spending all our energy and most of our time straightening the bloody table and stopping it falling down. We live our life at the edge of the round table, going round it and round it and round it, adjusting it here, adjusting it there. It takes an awful lot of energy. It really, really takes a lot of energy. And that's how we live our life. We all have dramas. We all have problems. We entertain ourselves for hours talking about them to ourselves mostly, but to other people too, if the poor sods will stay still long enough. We live our life on the edge of the table, and it takes so much energy to stop it falling down and tipping and rocking. And then gradually, with luck, you find a good spiritual system and you start to deal with the stuff around the edge of your life. Spiritual system, not religious system. Difference. Spirituality is for people who are not religious. Religion is for people who are not spiritual. My all-time favourite quote, and forgive me if I've said this before in another podcast, is from Carl Jung, the psychologist. Religion is a device designed to inhibit religious experiences. How true he was. You get yourself a good spiritual system, and then gradually you start to deal with the stuff that is round the edge of your table, and you start to spiral in, moving in. And of course, if you can imagine that table, the closer the weight gets to the center of that table, the less there is of a danger that it's going to fall over. If you put 1,000 tons right on top of the leg of that table, right in the very center, it would stay there solid. You put 3 ounces on the edge of the table and the bloody thing falls over. So gradually, any spiritual system worth its weight in salt or worth its weight in pizza moves you to the center. It gets you in touch with your soul. It gets you in touch with your essence. You become centered. You become in your grounded, solid place, in touch with the very vital being that you are. You're not a man, you're not a woman, you're not a hermaphrodite, you are not your feelings, you are not your thoughts, you are not your body, you are not your spiritual and sexual experiences and orientation and everything else. You are your soul, and that is in the center of the wheel. Any spiritual system aims to take you to that point of enlightenment, because when you're in your soul essence, you're in connection with everything else. So gradually, you move yourself more and more in touch with your soul place in the center, and you then no longer have to expend lots and lots of energy stopping your table falling over. So you have all that surplus energy. You can do amazing things. I like that as a metaphor, as an image, because to me it really works. People do live their life on the edge. We talk about living life on the edge. Just listen to our language. It's full of metaphors. We live our life on the edge, and our life is rocky. Our table's rocky because we're going around the edge of it all the time. Then we get centered and we become more stable. That's how it is. That's how it is. Any spiritual practice is like that. I worked with a Tibetan Rinpoche, and he was telling a story about how people who were working with him wanted to take an empowerment into a particular wrathful practice. Now, in Tibetan Buddhism, you have to be initiated into the different sort of, you know, you if you're familiar with Tibetan Buddhism, you know there are kind of loads and loads of quote-unquote gods and goddesses. I'm not going to go into what they are, you know, kind of exploring them and explaining them. But if you know, you've seen all the statues and the paintings and stuff like that. This was a practice, a set of spiritual teachings to do with one particular wrathful kind of monstery type creature. People were thinking it would be really cool to have this empowerment so they could work with it and learn the mantras and learn the ceremonies and everything else. So he said to them, okay, fine. This was in Aspen, I think, in Colorado, somewhere in Colorado, and it was cold, it was the middle of winter. He said, fine, I'll give you this empowerment if you go outside and you break the ice on the outdoor swimming pool and you swim. 2 a.m, very cold outside, lots of snow, lots of ice. You can do that, I'll give you the empowerment. And they all said, no, get lost, no way. So he said, well, I'm not going to give you the empowerment. And they said, why not? And he said, well, you go out and you swim in that pool and come back and I'll empower you. They wouldn't do it. And then he said, okay, you wanting me to give you this empowerment. Now, any spiritual system can be seen like this. Your life is like a chessboard, and any spiritual system gradually picks up one side of the chessboard and lifts it up in the air. So the chessboard is no longer flat. And all the pawns and the bishops and the queens and the rooks start to slide, because that's what happens when things aren't flat. And you see them slide, but they slide slowly and gently, and you have time to think, well, I don't need that one, I'll let it slide. Oh, that one I do need, I'll do something to fix it down to the ground. That's life, that's spirituality. That's fine if that happens nice and slow. He said, I'm not going to give you this empowerment because you won't even go out and swim in this cold water. Because if I give you this empowerment, it's not a case of somebody picking up your chessboard gently and a little bit higher and a little bit higher and a little bit higher. This is a case of somebody picking up your chessboard on one side and yanking it up upright. And all of your pieces are going to fall out and fall all over the floor. And you won't even go out and swim in a cold pool. That's how he explained it. And it's true. Our spiritual systems do tip the chessboard of our life up, and things do start to slide. And there are things that will come in and blast you. And yes, yeah, some people go for that, the short way, the shock way, and your pieces of your life will fall everywhere. But you've got to be a really special person to want to do that. Or you've got to be bloody mad. One of the two. Me, I think it's better to go a little bit slower and see which bits you want to let slide and which bits you want to fix down. So any spiritual system, whatever it is, It's going to give you those things. It's going to alter your life. If you work with the medicine wheel, it's going to alter your life. If you work with shamanism, it's going to alter your life. You get in touch with your feelings. You start to be honest with yourself about who you are. And you start to be honest with people around you about who you are. It's going to change your relationship with them. It's not necessarily going to be comfortable. People don't like dough creeping out from underneath the gingerbread cutter. But if you're worth your salt, you'll say sod that for a game of soldiers, because you'll want to be bigger than the gingerbread cutter shape that you are in at the moment. And it's worth the risk. And I've talked enough. Next time, I will talk about what you do with this ear medicine wheel thing. And then probably the time after that, I will teach the non-cardinal directions of southwest, southeast, northwest, northeast, and how they relate. Thank you very much, all of you who have contacted me. I really appreciate it. Love to get emails. Thanks. nick@sacredhoop.org. And if you want to visit the website for this podcast, and I will put up the handout PDF, I promise, now that we've actually covered a bit more ground, I'll do one and put it up. PDF will be on 3worlds.co.uk, number 3worlds.co.uk. Go to the website, that's my gallery website for all my antiques and things that I sell, all the sort of ritual objects and things. And in the left-hand side, you'll see the menu, and there's a little menu button for podcast. Click on there, and you can listen to the podcast on that site, and you will have the download there available in a day or two. Give me a bit of time. I don't have huge amounts of time, but I will do it, I promise. My own website is nicholaswood.net. That's my music and art and crafts and all that stuff. The magazine, Sacred Hoop magazine, plug for the magazine. Sacred Hoop is considered by a lot of people, and I'm not boasting here because this is honestly their words, they consider it to be the best shamanic magazine in the world. And I'm very touched by that. And I've heard it from numerous people, some of whom I have a great deal of respect for. So I'm very, very pleased with that. And we do try to be. We're full colour. We're published quarterly. We've been published since 1993. We feature all sorts of shamanic traditions. And we do a paper edition, which we will post to you, or a PDF edition, which we will email you. And it costs, forget the money bits. I can't remember it now, to be honest. But go to the website, which is the important thing that I want to say, which is sacredhoop.org, www.sacredhoop.org. And have a look at us. There are free issues there for you to download as PDFs, some sort of sample issues and some back issues as well. And if you have a mind to support the podcast that I'm doing and genuinely support these teachings and things going out into the world, could I ask that you maybe consider subscribing to us? We don't have huge numbers of subscribers. There are many, many thousand more subscribers who listen to this podcast than we have subscribers to the magazine. And the magazine is hand to mouth. We are not a big publishing company. I'm a shamanic practitioner and I do the magazine because that's what I do. We don't have big backers, and each issue is a trust exercise, and we still do it. And we've been doing it since 1993, so we're obviously trusting in a good way. And I would really appreciate people subscribing, because that's how we get to make better magazines and we get to spread these, I think, important teachings, especially at this time on the planet, to a lot of people. So if you can support us by subscribing, please do. And if you can't, and you can't afford it and whatever, that's absolutely cool. No worries. Go to the website and grab the freebies. Have a read of what we're about. Okay, I'm going to finish with some music. I have absolutely no idea what, so it's going to be a surprise. It might be some of me, or it might be some of somebody else. I have no idea. So I'm just going to rummage about in all my MP3 tracks and stick something on the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening. I do appreciate it. And I'll be around doing the next one in the next little while. Thanks. Bye.
Here's a song about absolutely nothing. It's not about me, not about anyone else, not about love, not about being young, not about anything else either. It came to me while I was asleep, riding along on my horse. I don't know exactly when I was born. I'm not happy. I'm not angry. I'm not a stranger here. I don't belong here. I can't help being like this. I was made like it by a fairy up on a mountaintop. I don't know if I'm asleep or awake unless someone tells me. My heart's almost broken. It's so sad. And all this doesn't matter a mouse to me. I swear it. I sent Mashal. I love someone. I don't know who she is, because I've never seen her. She hasn't done anything to please me or to upset me, and I don't care. I've never seen her, but I love her truly. She's not yet done what she should to me or what she shouldn't. When I don't see her, then I'm happy. She's not worth a cock to me, because I know someone who's gentler and prettier and richer as well. I don't know where she lives, whether up in the heights or down in the fields. I daren't tell you the wrongs she does me. It hurts me too much, and it hurts me to stay here. So I'm leaving. I've made the poem. I don't know what it's about. I'm going to send it to someone, who'll send it with someone else to someone over in Anjou. Perhaps he'll be able to send me the key from his little box and unravel this riddle.